Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
This is a Saturday Night Live Friday speaker meeting.
Hi, I'm Alex, an alcoholic. I welcome anybody that's new to Alcoholics Anonymous. If you got a problem with drinking, you're in the right place, I'm sure. I'm really impressed by our stack of signature cards over here. Looks like there's more cards than there are people in the room, but that's probably just because I can't count too good. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous to get my card signed on three separate occasions because I thought I was just a drunk driver, and I came into AA and got my card signed and got out of AA, and nothing ever happened. Except I got another drunk driver, and they sent me back to AA and got my card signed and left, and nothing happened. And then I got another drunk driver, and something happened on that last time. I haven't drank, and meeting's over. Thanks a lot. Yeah, I woke up about, I don't know, 40 minutes ago. I thought I'd take a little quick nap, you know, and kind of wind down after my busy week. And so I'm kind of waking up. But, you know, for anybody that knows me, knows anything about my story, I want to thank you for being here tonight, not running out of the building when you saw it was me talking tonight. Anybody that's new, that hasn't heard any part of my story, I want to try to encourage you to try to look for the similarities. They asked me to do that when I was new, and it's helped a great deal. So I get to talk about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And usually as a joke, I would say, well, you know, it all started when I was born, you know. But that laugh, that was about how good the last time it was, you know. It was just, so I thought I would start, you know, when my father met my mother. Okay, so that didn't work too good either. But you know what? I still got some mixed feelings about what it was that set me apart, you know, because I, for crying out loud, I'm an alcoholic, I'm different, you know, and there was something that set me apart from the rest, you know. But I, you know, I couldn't control my drinking. I want to say, you know, my parents divorced or, you know, when I was a kid, and I was this little fat kid, well, not a big fat kid, but I was a little fat kid. My dad, you know, like gave me those crew cuts because somebody bought him some barber's shears, you know. And they sent me off to school, and all the kids were so cruel on the playground, and they made me feel so self-centered, you know. And you know, I got to find alcohol and drugs to help me, you know, escape that harsh reality that I was living in, and that worked for me until the cops started catching me driving drunk, you know. But I don't know, you know. I don't think my life growing up is really that different from most people. At least that's what I hear statistically, you know. I think what's abnormal these days is for people to grow up in a real functional, healthy home. You know, you just don't run into a lot of that. Not a lot of that going around. Except maybe in Dr. Laura's house, maybe. I don't know. Anyway, So, you know, I love to drink, man, and all that stuff when I was a kid, that was all true for me, you know. I remember when my parents divorced, it was like, I'm 44 years old, so I gotta like back up to the fifth grade, however old you are in that, and then whack that many amount of years off of how old I am. So I think that puts me like back in the 60s. And, you know, there just weren't a whole lot of people running around going, you know, I'm from a divorced family. That really set me apart from the rest. And I took on a lot of shame for that, you know. I was convinced that I, as a child, was responsible for them divorcing. And I came to terms with that just a few years ago. You know, I'm not that powerful. At least not in that area of life. So please, anybody out there that doesn't know me, please don't take me half as serious as I do. But no, really, that sort of thinking, it just got better. You know, that kind of thinking just kept going with me. And so, you know, I didn't want to be who I was, you know, and drugs and alcohol helped me think that I wasn't who I was, you know. So I didn't have a lot of love, you know. They weren't showing the love everywhere I was going. And I was alone, you know. I was alone and afraid, and I wasn't going to let anybody know that, so I had to act like I wasn't, you know. And I was a real, have you ever, like, done things that you knew you shouldn't be doing, but you did them just so you could, like, feel accepted into a group of people, you know? Well, okay, so there's like leaders and followers, okay? I wasn't the leader, you know what I'm saying? Anyways, so I lived that life for X amount of years, and and then somewhere in sobriety, I realized I was just like this grown-up kid that didn't know how to be an adult, you know? It's pretty weird to have that thought that far along in life. I wonder if other people have ever had that thought, you know, people that didn't have to come to AA. So I guess I don't feel much like talking about what it was like a long time ago, because, you know, that's behind me. But I like to talk about the last 2 years of my drinking, because I know I should never forget what that was like. And I'm not crying. So the last 2 years of my drinking, I'm dry all of a sudden. I had ended a relationship that I was in. I was with the woman for 10 years, and we were married for 7. And I was hiding my drinking from her. I was embezzling my own paycheck so I could have drinking money. Yeah. And she was really frustrated with my drinking, you know, and, oh, thank you, my love. This is my wife here. So, and she was really disgusted and frustrated with my drinking. Pay attention. Damn it. I remember she told me that I always embarrassed her whenever we went out. And I was like, come on. Every time? You know? Yeah, every time. And she would start ragging on me about my drinking, you know, and I would, like, throw this fit and say, okay, I'm not going to drink anymore. That's it. I'm done. Well, she drank with me, and she would ask me, she would explain to me that it wasn't that I had to stop entirely. I just had to cut back, you know, and not be such a pig and get drunk every time I drank. And I, okay, I'll do that then. And I never could do that. So it was just kind of round and round with all that nonsense. And she was deathly afraid of me dying on the highway drunk, because I would always drink after work and then drive home drunk. And one night I came home, and I walked through the door, and I'm not standing real still. I'm drunk. And she gave me that look. You guys probably have seen the look. You worthless piece of shit. You've done it for the last time. Look, you know. And she basically left me alone that night. Maybe she didn't leave me alone. I can't remember nothing. But I remember that she asked for a separation the next day. And, you know, I had such high standards. I was shocked, you know, because I wasn't going to be a loser like my parents were and get a divorce. You know, I was just so stunned. And it got me so angry that I told her, fuck you, I want a divorce. You know? So that was like, you know, I was cool at that point, see, because I had made a real final decision right then. And we decided we were going to divorce, and took her about 2 or 3 months to get out of the place. So I got to be whoever I wanted to be while she was still there. That was really strange like that. But in those last couple of months while she was there, I think I had some of those, I'm going to be good and I'm going to make this thing get back together. And that didn't work either, you know. And I just started getting really afraid, you know, more afraid than normal. But on the other hand, I was really looking forward to this nag being out of here, you know. She'd nagged me for so many years. So after she left, I got to party. And I party around the clock. It wasn't like I had people over there. I just party by myself. You know. And I remember I got laid. I was in construction. I got laid off. And I didn't go look for work, you know. I got on my little unemployment. And I have an aunt who's got some money. And she was making my mortgage payments for me. And she gave me, you know, a few hundred extra to help tide me over, you know, and I just drank around the clock. That's not true. Got to be honest here. I drank till I passed out, you know. And I only got up to leave the house to go get some more alcohol. And I was really centrally located really well. I had like 3 liquor stores within a block, and I had a pizza parlor that I could call in for pizza. So I could go to the different liquor stores so they wouldn't see that I was drinking so much, right? If I went to the same one every time I needed something, he'd see that I'm coming here a lot. So I had the advantage of going to multiple stores so nobody could really keep track of my drinking. Like they gave a rat's ass, you know? And I gotta tell you, that whole analyzing that whole situation, I wasn't able to do that at the time. I just did it because I knew that was the right thing to do then. But in AA, somebody talked about doing that, and I went, well, I did that. Whoa, that was pretty clever of me. <You know? Come to AA and get clever. Anyway, I like to remember waking up, pardon me, coming to in my easy chair, and my pants were all wet, you know? Oh, I must have spilt my beer on me when I fell asleep. And somebody in an AA meeting talked about wetting their pants. I denied that for as long as I possibly could. Yeah. And she was gone about 6 months and I got my first drunk driving. Oh, pardon me, my second drunk driving. I made it 13 years between the first one and the second one. And, God, I was so devastated, you know. My life was really in the toilet. You know, you're sitting in the back of the cop car and you're thinking, this is what it's all of this life has gotten me to this, you know. I just took one of them real quick inventories and I'm really screwed, you know. And, they took me down to the jail and I guess I was putting up some kind of commotion because they needed to take me off to the side and have a little talk with me. And at that point, I explained to them that I wanted to kill myself, so they called some friends of theirs, and they gave me a little ride over to the hospital, and I just learned recently in a psychology class I'm taking that I was put in 4-point restraints. That's pretty good. So, yeah, they took me over to the crazy place, you know, and I did not belong there, for crying out loud, you know. So I convinced them that they could let me go, so they put me into the custody of my mother. 35 years old, feel like I was being picked up at the principal's office, you know. So she took me home, and I had to spend the rest of the day convincing her I was okay to be left alone, so as soon as she left, I could start drinking again. You know, I had a .357 Magnum at the time, and I thought if I could just blow my brains out, I wouldn't have to deal with tomorrow, you know. It was just too much for me at that point. And I, somewhere between then and my next drunk driving, I think I tried to kill myself a half a dozen times, but only once did I ever, like, get it in my mouth, you know. I thought maybe like this, you know, but I knew the way you had to do it was like, yeah, you know. So I got it in there one night, you know, I was really drunk, and I had the hammer back. And I had my finger on the trigger, and I just couldn't do it, you know, and all of a sudden I heard myself say, please God, help me. And right at that instant, this thought came to me how selfish it would be for me to kill myself. That didn't make sense, you know. My next thought was my mother wiping my brains off the wall, you know, so they could sell the condo, and I didn't want to put her through that. You know, I'm just... And really, up to that point in my life, I did not, like, have a working relationship with a God or a higher power. You know, it was, I think it was just, that's what people say when they're at that point. You know, and that's what it got me to. And I said that. God did what he had to do at that moment. If he hadn't have done that, you'd have a different speaker here tonight. I got out from underneath that condominium. A lot of pressure trying to keep borrowing money to pay those mortgage payments. A lot of pressure. So I got out from under that. I got a chunk of money. I paid off my, aunt, and I was fine again, you know. And I went through $18,000 in about 6 months. I'd hooked up with this girl that I met in a bar who could drink just like me. I was living like I had lived about 10 years earlier, living with an old high school friend, and life was good, you know. I was drinking at the bars, and drinking scotch, and had all the drugs I needed, and... I think I was even working sometimes back then. I get this drunk driving again. I just got my license back, and I got another drunk driving ticket. And I was really upset about that because I had been really good all night, you know. The other guys were all riding our motorcycles around, and they were all driving all crazy, and I was being real good, and... when the bar was closed, you know, we got to hang around because we knew the bartender. And we stayed till about 3:30 or 4. And when we were going home, we doing a little racing, you know, no big deal. There was nobody on the road. We were real safe, you know, about 120 on the expressway. And the only car on the road was an unmarked police car, and he got us, and they took me down to jail. And there I was, sitting in the back of the cop car again. And it had only been about, I don't know, a year, 13 months, 14 months, since the last time I was sitting in the back of the cop car. And that really sobered me up, you know. Here I am again. I'm right back in that spot again. So I got back into that. I got to kill myself again. And my last attempt at committing suicide was getting really drunk and getting in my car, take my gun with me. And my plan was to drive to Santa Barbara. I was leaving at about 3 in the morning. And when the highway patrol pulled me over, I'd just have to point my gun at them, and then they'd take care of it for me. Well, so when I made it to Santa Barbara, you can imagine how angry I was. You know, I swear, I had like one eye closed, and there was about 14 lanes. And I can't believe I made it there. You know, I have no idea how I got there, what happened between San Jose and Santa Barbara, but I was really angry when I got there. The last 11 months of my drinking, after I got that last drunk driving, I drank for 11 more months, kind of like the way that guy drank in Leaving Las Vegas, or is that the right name? And I had this idea, since I can't blow my brains out, I can drink myself to death, you know, and I tried that. And another thing that was going on at that time was they sent me to drunk driving school, multiple offender school. I'd already graduated the drunk driving school. And they were teaching us how alcohol doesn't always kill immediately. Unless you're like dying on the highway, or maybe a jealous husband blows your brains out or something. But most alcoholics just kind of linger, and they really suffer a lot, and their health deteriorates, and it's really not a pretty sight. And that kind of destroyed my great plan, you know, that I wasn't going to probably be able to drink myself to death. So another thing they wanted me to do was start to attend meetings. They wanted me to get 40 meetings that time of AA, and to have 10 of them done by such and such a date, whatever date that was. They, I put it off till the last second. You guys probably always take care of business, but I waited till the last minute, you know, to get 10 meetings in before the next weekend. And I came in, this friend of mine who I drank with and gone to jail with, and he got sober somewhere along the way. I think he had about 7 years of not drinking, and told me about Saturday Night Live. So he brought me to my first meeting, and in that, backed up about 2 days, I'd just been up for about 3 days, drinking as much as I could, as often as I could. When you don't go to sleep, that you can really put it away. And on the third day, I'd left the house of this man. I used to be so mean in this part of my story, you know. I met this person just like me in this bar who fell off her bar stool. I helped her up and took her home, you know. I mean, they call that cripple shooting in AA. I did it out there, and you know, I didn't want anybody. I remember I snuck her out of my house so my heroin addict roommate wouldn't see what I was doing. Anyway, I just left her house that morning, and I got together with my friend, or that evening, and I got together with my friend. We came to the meeting, And it was birthday night, I found out later, the September birthday meeting in 92. And a miracle happened that night. I swear, man, I heard that guy say something. I heard him say several somethings. And at least half a dozen somethings I can still remember today. And the one thing that really stuck with me was that he said that if there's one person in this room that can get something out of what I shared tonight and it helps you get sober, then he did his job, you know. And I'm sitting over in the room at El Paseo, and there's probably 300 people in there. And I just, at that moment, convinced myself I'm going to be that one person. I had the biggest ego. It's gotten bigger since then, but that night I had the biggest ego in the room. And it was going to be me, you know what I'm saying? And so we got out of the meeting, and I was on my way up to get my card that I had signed. And I didn't know it was tradition for everybody to come up and shake the speaker's hand, which I will give time for tonight when the meeting's over. Look at her shaking her head back there. Anyway, and you know what? I'm up there to get my card, and I shake this guy's hand, the guy that gave his talk, you know? And he was a really old guy. He was probably 70, you know? And he had just the bluest eyes, you know? And I think I said thank you or whatever. And he looked at me, and I don't even think he said anything, you know? He was speechless. He just talked for an hour. But he looked at me, and these eyes just got me, man. He looked at me like he cared, you know, and that really touched me. And I remember that, just like it happened an hour ago. So I left that meeting, and dropped my buddy off, and I go back up to that lady's house, and I show up with a six-pack of Dr. Pepper or something like that, you know, and I don't drink anymore, you know. She's all, really? So she goes get this bag of dope. She's all, come on, let's do some of this. Oh, nope, don't do that either. Where'd you get that? You know. She told me I gave it to her. I think she stole it. Anyway. So I mean, that's a miracle. Wouldn't everybody agree that that's some kind of miracle? You know, I walk out of a meeting and I don't drink anymore. And I don't do that other stuff either, you know. And I showed up and I got all my meetings in, and everything was great, man. And I was in AA, and one day I had to leave town and get some parts. And one of my old high school chums painted some parts for me. And his roommate brought out this bag of weed, and this is after I'd been sitting at their kitchen table for about an hour. You know how we get all preachy, and we're going to tell everybody how bitching we are now that we're sober. I just got through telling them all that stuff, and they brought out this bag of pot. I had to have some, you know, and I told them how I would really like to have some of that, my friend tells me, but you've just spent an hour telling me that you're an AA. And I says, yeah, that's alcohol. No, give me some of that, you know? And you know what? I took some of that, and it made me feel awful, you know? It just made me feel terrible. And I probably, after it went in, I felt bad, and I left the house, you know? And I was in a meeting that night, and I'd been around AA for a little while at that point, and I knew that what I had done was wrong. But since I wasn't, I didn't have a sponsor or nothing like that, and I convinced myself that since it made me feel bad, it didn't count. Right? That makes sense, doesn't it, to you newcomers? I bet it makes sense to some of you oldcomers. That's right. So I had deemed myself, I'm okay, you're okay, and I haven't taken anything since then. somewhere along the way, this guy self-appointed himself as my sponsor, and I got honest with him. And he said, that's fine, you know, sometimes that happens. And we got a calendar out, and we figured out when it was for sure that I hadn't taken nothing. And my sobriety date is, it's the one we know where I haven't taken nothing. It's October 20th, 1992. And that day hasn't had to change. And that's great, you know. So that's sort of like what's happened. But that's really empty from what's happened since then. Oh, my God. Getting sober. Jim B. says, the worst thing about, the best thing about getting sober is you only have to do it once. If you want. I have gone absolutely insane sober. I have been so spiritually lifted that I have transcended all and become one with Him. You know? I'm telling you, man, you can have it all in AA. I remember, I see my dear friend Woody's here tonight. Oh, my first sponsor. I told him he was going to be my sponsor. I was so afraid they would say no, you know. I was running around the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, sober, without a sponsor, getting to know the right people, learning where all the right coffee shops are, you know, and doing what I did best was fitting in, you know, and make my friends so I could be accepted, and I did all that, you know, and I kept going to a lot of meetings, and the people in the meetings would keep waving their arms over here and say that when they did this stuff, their life got better, and I was fine, you know, I was just fine, and I wasn't doing this, but I was fine, and at 11 months of being fine, living up at this guy's house, I put my name in the chicken shit box, the sponsorship box, and a guy called me up and said he'd be my sponsor, and I said, okay, and I met him, and I thought he was weird. And one day I needed a home. We'll skip that little story there. One day I needed a home, and he had one. He invited me into his home. And I'm living up in Redwood Estates, and I'm 11 months dry. And I still got my 357. And one night, man, I don't know what happened. I'm sure it was very important at the time. But it really had me depressed again, you know, and I really wanted to end it all again. And something came to me that night, you know, I knew I could like blow my brains out. I knew I could probably drink if I wanted to, but I knew because I'd gone to enough meetings and I'd heard that if I do this stuff, you know, something will change. It'll get better. So I thought, what the heck, you know, I can try that. I can try this AA like they talk about it, you know. And I'm sure it was probably that following weekend that I drug Woody off of a dance floor and I told him that he was my sponsor. And he says, no problem, man. You know? And you're going to do your inventory before I give you your chip. See, I was going to be a year sober in a month. You know? And I was like, okay, man, whatever. You know, I knew I had to do this thing. So I got to do that. He gave me my chip. And then I just coasted, you know, and I coasted, and I coasted, and I stole his girlfriend, and then he fired me. And then Kenny fell in love with me and took me under his wing, and then he was my sponsor until he hurt my feelings, so I fired him, you know. And I bounced around on a couple of other sponsors, you know, and then I got the best sponsor in the world, you know, and I'm about 3 years sober, and I got the best sponsor in the world. He don't make me do steps or nothing. He's cool. Everybody loves him. You know, he talks at conventions. And, man, I just patterned my life right after his. And I did whatever I wanted to do on the outside world. And when I came around to AA, I did it the AA way, you know. And when I was about 4 years sober, he got loaded and I got scared again. Because I figured, you know, my number was coming up pretty soon. Because I was doing just what he was doing. And I want to mention that while I was doing those same, a lot of those things, I knew that it was wrong. I was doing things I knew that was wrong. But as long as somebody else is doing it, you know, then it's okay, right? Two lefts make a right, or two wrongs make a right, or something. That's three lefts make a right. So, you still working on that? No, think about it. If you go around three times, you're going right. Anyway. So, I'll let you guys finish thinking about that, then I'll pick up where I was at. So I was really scared, you know, and I got, I had been playing, what's that great game? Some card game with like six decks of cards. And I was playing it with this guy, a little group of sober people, like long time sober, 10 and beyond, you know, under those long years. And I had seen him when I was new, and I thought he was a little punk, you know, little badass, punk, little guy. Knock him over with a feather. He had a license plate frame that said, Steps or Death. I had heard about him. And I was playing cards with him. He was a nice guy. You know, he was nothing like the guy I thought he was. And we had been getting to know each other. So when my sponsor got loaded, I knew I needed a sponsor. I knew that, and I asked him to be my sponsor, and he said, no problem. Here's your first assignment. Be done in 2 weeks or get yourself another sponsor. And it was like he turned out to be the guy I thought he was, you know. He just turned on me, you know. But fortunately, the people at AA had hurt my feelings enough that I knew this was just another knucklehead trying to hurt my feelings. And I did what he said, you know. And this is the first time in recovery, in 4 years of recovery, that I took all 12 steps in a row without stopping, you know, because my ass was on the line. I hope everybody gets to do that. But you know what? It sucked. You could actually be like Randy. You know, the guy shows up and, like, he doesn't fool around. He just comes in here and takes the steps. That's weird. That, you know, to me, that's weird, you know. But I've heard a lot of people say that they just came in here, you know, they were desperate, and they did whatever it took to stay here. Maybe somewhere down the road my story will change, but I doubt it. I hope it doesn't change, you know. But see, you know, when I asked him to be my sponsor, there was something I wanted. You know, I wanted to be, I was like in a dead-end job, in a relationship that I knew wasn't working, you know. And I thought the steps would magically turn my job into a better one and my relationship into a better relationship. And that didn't happen. You know, I broke up. I get married. 5 years sober, I got married. If I could offer any advice to anybody that's thinking about getting married and maybe just kind of looking around, I just want to tell you, don't marry a stripper. Okay? I'm serious. I know it looks good. Hey, I'm there with you, man. I know it looks good, but hey, you ask anybody that's married a stripper and divorced how good it is to marry a stripper. Pardon me. So, hey, I think it's only fair to pass down my experience, strength, and hope. So 3 weeks into the marriage, she runs off with one of my sponsees on a crank run. You think I'm making that up? Nobody died. I didn't get drunk. And I pulled out of it pretty quick. You know, when I measure that to the way it was when my first wife left. You know, drinking around the clock, sticking guns in my mouth, driving drunk to get killed. You know, so when this happened with 5 years of sobriety, man, you know, I thought I pulled through it pretty good. Now, I might want to question why I was willing to jump into something that crazy at 5 years sober, but, you know, we'll work on that later. Had a plan, you know how plans go. But that really curbed my necessity for relationships. I had had more than my share. And I spent a lot of time not trying to get into a new relationship. And they had told me when I showed up, somebody in here new tonight might have been to one of their new first meetings and heard, don't get in a relationship in the first year. And then the guy sitting behind you said, that ain't in the book. That's bullshit. You know, I heard all that. And I was with the guy behind me. You know, that's bullshit. and it was probably the best thing I ever did, to stay out of a relationship for a while. So I stayed out of one for 9 months. That's quite a while. Beat myself silly. This is the part where I have to decide whether you're laughing with me or laughing at me. Anyway, Monica asked me out for coffee. Scared the hell out of me. But she looked harmless enough, so I said, okay. We got married February 12th. It's like the day, it's Lincoln's birthday, okay? a couple days before Valentine's Day. I can remember every anniversary because I just started zero. Anyway, I thought it would be a good idea to further my education and get a new career. I started going to night school. If there's anybody that's younger than me and is thinking about it, I want to encourage you to get on the bandwagon before you're old like me. It's pretty tough. I don't get to as many meetings as I want to. I'm tired all the time. You know, 18 months, and it's going to open up some new opportunities for me. I love being involved in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I miss all that stuff that I used to do. I can get so, you know, it's like I'm doing really wonderfully today, but if you were to ask this guy over here, Matt, Wednesday, I was ready to kill, you know? I don't know what's going on. I get really self-centered, you know? And shit's not going my way. And I start to take on, I start using my brains again and thinking that this shouldn't be like this, and how can I make it be like the way I want it to be? And I realize that, you know, I'm powerless over that stuff. And then that makes me mad, you know, and I feel like a victim. And then I talk to somebody who really doesn't care about my feelings, and they tell me shit like, well, you volunteered. Man, that's mean. I'm really glad there's those people in AA, too. You know, they don't, like, co-sign all my bullshit. You go down and have a little drink together. But, I was thinking, there was something happened when I got so desperate. not that desperation that some, not that kind of desperation that I had when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I really don't think I was desperate. I think I was done. You know, but I got to stay sober. I experienced that pure and refined sober alcoholism. You know, where you're not drinking. And you go absolutely crazy, you know, not drinking. Because the people that know better than me will tell you, you know, well, there's only one step that mentions alcohol and the rest is all about dealing with life. You know? But that point of desperation that I hit at 4 years has never returned since then. I get very angry. And what I do today when that happens is I don't make things worse than they already seem. I know in the past I would want to like contribute to it, you know, make it bigger than it is. But now I, by not like participating in it where I'm going to, you know, make it worse, it doesn't, I can get away from it faster. You know, it's just, sound like I'm talking shit or something. But, I know, like if I use some kind of experience, like that experience at 5 years sober, you know, if I think about what happened there and I pulled out of it without making things worse, it really doesn't matter what comes along if I can remember where I've come from. You know, I've kept coming back to AA, happy, mad, glad, sad, whatever. I keep coming back, and everything changes. I was at a meeting down at the convention in Monterey, and she said something like, you know, I'm really glad that nobody told me that if you take the steps, your life will get better, because quite frankly, it hasn't gotten better. And I don't know, she's 20-something years sober, and I thought, you know, I can relate to that. Because, you know, outside that door is the same world that was out there the day I showed up. It's the same. And then she went on to say that what's better in her life is her life, you know. And I relate to that because my life is better. My actual life. Like when my life in here is better. And it's great to be sober, you know. I was at, I started going to church about a year ago, and I was at church for, they call it the Road to Resurrection, and I want to apologize to anybody that gets disgusted when they hear the word church. I want to tell you, I felt that way too. So I'm in church, and they're recreating the crucifixion, and they got this nice set and the actors, and they grab this guy who looks like Jesus, the guy's dressed like Roman guards, and they started beating him and whipping him and spitting on his face, and I'm crying, you know, big macho Alex, you know, I start crying. It was really trippy, and then I cried for like until it was over, and then when it was over, we didn't want to leave right away because there was a lot of feelings going on. And then we get in our car and we start driving home. We're talking about it, and it's all, that was really powerful. And I remember thinking something or maybe mentioning that it's really nice to be sober, to feel all that. You know, that meant a big deal. You know, and then we get home, and there's this card in the mailbox for us. It's from my dad, and we open it up. It's a happy Easter card, you know, and it mentions all this God stuff. We start crying again. And ain't it great to be sober? you know, that's just such a long jump from where I was before I got here. You know? I mean, I cried a lot when I was drunk. I was like begging for forgiveness. And, please don't take me away. You know, that kind of stuff. Now I'm like crying over other weird kind of things, you know? Compassion and love. And good things. It's weird. My time's up, and I really want to thank you guys for hanging out with me tonight. Please keep coming back.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.